then another will take my place. For the chance to behold your face. And the day of my life was my greatest time. As they fall from your open hand, at the call of the wind's command. Many words you've spoken when there's nothing to say. They fall upon the ears of those who don't know the way. To read between the lines, that lead between the lines, that lead me to you. The shadow of night is high. The eagle emerges to fly. And the day of this life will find rays of sand as they fall from your aching hand. And vanish upon the land. Many words are spoken when there's nothing to say. They fall upon the ears of those who don't know the way. To read between the lines, by following the signs that can lead to you. But show me how to follow you and follow you there. Teach me how to reach you, I can't find my own way. Let me see the light, let me be the light. And so, with no warning, I said goodbye. In the dawn of the morning sky, the eagle will rise again. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, July 10th, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. That's questions, plural. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of a website at which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. You can also support us by purchasing the books, Government by Consent and Court Access in the Common Law, also found on the right-hand side of our website. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in our scripture reading. We're in the book of Hebrews. And we're in chapter 5, I believe. Yep. Hebrews chapter 5, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 5. For every high priest taken from among men is ordained for men in things pertaining to God, that he may offer both gifts and sacrifices for sins. Who can have compassion on the ignorant and on them that are out of the way, for that he himself also is compassed with infirmity. And by reason hereof he ought, as for the people, so also for himself to offer for sins. And no man taketh this honor unto himself, but he that is called of God, as was Aaron. So also Christ glorified not himself to be made an high priest, but he that said unto him, Thou art my Son, today have I begotten thee. As he saith also in another place, Thou art a priest for ever after the order of Melchizedek. Who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with strong crying and tears unto him that was able to save him from death, and was heard in that he feared, though he were a son, yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered. And being made perfect, he became the author of eternal salvation unto all them that obey him, called of God and high priest after the order of Melchizedek, of whom we have many things to say, and hard to be uttered, seeing ye are dull of hearing. For when for the time ye ought to be teachers, ye have need that one teach you again, which be the first principles of the oracles of God, and are become such as have need of milk and not of strong meat. For everyone that useth milk is unskillful in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. But strong meat belongeth to them that are of full age, even those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil.
Okay, Dan, do we have any questions tonight? Talking.
Yes, we...
Well, I guess...
Somebody just muted me. We have quite a few... questions, John. You're just trying to help me out, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. First question.
Questions, huh?
Yep. I urge you to listen to the brief audio cast clip that's provided with this question, but I don't think you need to consider that the U.S. Supreme Court clerk who has blocked and is blocking the prerogative writ mandamus, which you submitted to the Supreme Court, is guilty of the crimes mentioned in the clip. Therefore, I urge and highly recommend that you submit a criminal complaint against that Supreme Court clerk to the U.S. Navy Adjudicial Advocate General's Corps, JAG, to the attention of Vice Admiral Darcy E. Crandall, Jr., Chief Judge, ASAP, especially since they are the ones who have been and who are conducting all the military warrants, arrests, tribunals, and executions. JAG just executed by hanging till death Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer about 4 days ago for COVID crimes on the people. The audio cast in the clip in the link is short. You will see why I urge you to submit a criminal complaint against the Supreme Court clerk to JAG when you listen to it. Any comment?
Well, yeah, I did see that information. I'm looking into it somewhat. I don't know that I can believe all the stories of people being executed for crimes and so on and so forth at this point. I mean, it could be possible, but I don't know that I have any real strong evidence to make that claim. There's been a lot of things out there that are kind of extreme and people run with it, and then you find out as time goes on it's not true. So I don't think we have any solid evidence of those things. But it is interesting concerning the JAG, I believe it's called JAG. And so I'm looking into that as a potential thing.
Okay. We keep hearing about President Trump's imminent false felony conviction, but hear that it will not bar him from holding the office of president. My question regarding this is, how come other individuals are prohibited from holding lower public office and pristine private sector jobs with felony convictions? Where in the Constitution does it prohibit the people from owning a firearm, voting, and serving as a juror?
I was following along till the last part of that. Read that last part again.
Well, they're just saying that if Trump can be...
Concerning Trump, potentially his charges against him. I'm not aware of the fact that a president guilty of a felony could possibly be president, especially if they're going through the process at the time, so I don't think that's possible. But, on the other hand, because these are false charges, that's a whole other story. So I'm not sure how that's all going to play out as far as, when these crimes are going to be really realized by everyone that they're false charges. I mean, anybody paying attention with common sense and listening to what's going on recognizes the facts that, it's a witch hunt and there is no charges that really could be held up against them, at least not what they're claiming. So.
Okay, now the second part of that, John, was where in the Constitution does it prohibit the people from owning a firearm, voting, and serving as a juror if you have a felony conviction? Why the double standard?
Well, you can have a firearm if you were guilty of a felon and the price was paid. I don't see how once time has gone by, I don't see once why an individual can't have a weapon and have a right to a weapon. You go back into the days of the Old West. You couldn't survive without a weapon anyway. But again, it's an unalienable right. You can't lose an unalienable right. You could lose it for a time because you could lose your freedom if convicted. But that's for a period of time. So I don't agree that a felon cannot get a weapon. Someone who's deranged and dangerous and ill, of course we'd want to try to prevent an individual like that from getting a weapon. But that's kind of difficult to figure those things out.
Okay, could you please explain the difference between power and authority and legal and lawful?
Legal and lawful is the same. I looked that one up in the dictionary, and I looked it up in Black's Law particularly, and it's just the way two words are used in a different way, but they mean identically the same thing. To say something is legal but not lawful is a contradict in itself. It's an oxymoron in a sense. So, it's just something somebody made up. Legal, lawful is the same thing.
Okay, I don't know how much of the NLA's listening audience is aware of this, but now that we are in July, an app known as FedNow is said to be implemented on July 18th per Executive Order 14067. I'm cautioning anyone that may receive these apps to please reject them. From what I have heard, the FedNow app targets Social Security and pension payments first, and then cascade into all private monitored cashless transactions. I hope that this is another scare event, but we should be on the alert. Have you heard anything about that?
I'm not sure I followed through with that. Maybe I missed the beginning.
Okay. There is an app supposedly under Executive Order 14067 called FedNow. Yeah. It supposedly will be implemented on July 18th, but supposedly it will take over things like your Social Security and pension payments and then move into private monitored cashless transactions, whether you want it to or not.
Is this what they're trying to move the banking system into, these apps?
I didn't catch that, John. Can you repeat that?
Are they trying to move the banking system into using your apps or something somehow?
This app would be part of it, I assume.
Well, look, technology is great. It saves a lot of time. It's amazing the kind of amount of work that someone can do with computers. I remember going into business in the beginning, long before computers were around. And I'd be out there with a typewriter creating my proposals and different things. And as time went on, computers and even estimating and all kinds of things. But then it gets to a point where it becomes a danger and people become too reliable on it. And I'll tell you what, you know, you call government agencies, you call private corporations, you call medical systems, you call anybody, and you talk to AI. They don't want to answer their phones anymore. You know, everybody's moving to AI, and the AI doesn't even answer, you know, can't even respond to certain things ultimately anyway, unless it's very simple. As far as the phone calls are concerned, they never can understand me, what I'm saying. But we're at a time, I think, that technology is becoming dangerous. You know, AI is becoming dangerous. Putting these phones into our children's hands and at a very young age is destructive and demoralizing. They listen to sociopaths and psychopaths ultimately because they really gain the loudest voice on a lot of these social medias, especially the ones that the children go to. The destruction that they do to each other in school. And it's up to the people to make that change. You know, I don't think we can stop it, of course. I hope we can stop AI because I think AI is really getting to a point where it's really dangerous and we better do something about it because I do believe that AI could destroy the world at some point in time. But as far as these phones and things, you look at, we shouldn't be giving our children these phones. They should not, they're not capable of dealing with these kind of things when they're older, maybe. And, you know, phones basically, even for a lot of adults, I mean, they really make themselves, I don't know, simple-minded, in my opinion, because all they do is tweet. They can't have a long conversation. People don't read books anymore. Things are just getting really, really bad with these phones. You know, you go into a place, and I think I've mentioned this before, you know, like a Dunkin' Donuts or someplace or a coffee house, and people used to get together and sit and talk. For years, I remember that. I mean, especially when I was early in my business and meeting up with other contractors and things. But today you walk into these places and, yeah, the seats are all filled, but nobody's talking to each other. They're all looking on their phones, talking to someone else somewhere else. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So, I don't know. People have to get self-control on this, in my opinion. And they're becoming destructive, I think. So, technology is a problem. And it's great, too. It's the other side of things, but it's becoming a problem. So maybe the Tower of Babel, we're coming at that point. All right, what
Okay.
else?
The next question is, better tell whoever NLA has who has taken on conducting committees of safety in Virginia that the ground is very fertile on this one, that they better move in on it and find out who all the 84% of parents who are opposed to the woke agenda, which the school board has ignored and has refused to hear and obey the parents, well, in this matter, all of those parents will likely join the COS in Virginia once they find out about the COS and about the power these parents have to do something about those insurrectionist school board members, that is, remove them from office. And it gives a link to an article on that school board.
Well, yeah, that is true. That is definitely a way that we're going to grow in a very powerful way very quickly. It's going to really help us for critical mass, you know, which is dealing with the problems with education. So, but the thing is we're at the infancy. I'm looking here now to see how many committees of safety we have. And, you know, last time we spoke about this, maybe a week or two ago, about a week ago, as a matter of fact, we had 150, and I think 151 I saw. Today I'm looking, we've got 157. So in the past week, we've picked up six more committees of safety in process. But there's a lot of people that have not gotten involved in committees of safety. You know, they come here and they're listening and so on and so forth. But and that's good. And you're learning. You've got to learn and hopefully getting an education. But we've got to get active. And you know, again, if you look at the numbers, you know, we got 3,000 counties. Okay, and out of 3,000 counties, let's say we can get an average of 30 people per county. That's 90,000 people. That's a drop in the bucket when you think about the population of the United States. 90,000 is nothing. It's a very small percentage of the population. But the key thing is this: you get 20, 30 people in the county, and you do all the necessary things that you have to do in order to get a relationship with the sheriff, get all your paperwork together, and accomplish certain goals. And I think one of the most, well, the two most important subcommittees, the first one to really be created is the Committee of Correspondence, because someone signs up on our website and they take on that responsibility as the Committee of Correspondence, and you don't need a lot of people for that. One or two people is fine, in order to bring necessary information from here at National Liberty Alliance and the latest things down to the county committees of safety. But again, that's one of the most important committees, and it is the first one created, really, as far as the subcommittee is concerned. But the second one, and probably the most important one, is the educational committee. And because for numerous reasons. Number one, we have to take our schools back. I think we've lost two generations. I don't even know if some of these generations can even be saved. It's that bad. They've really destroyed our children with what they did with the masks and causing all kinds of problems, and the children getting shots and putting masks on their face and the psychological things. And it just goes on and on and on. Children aren't learning anything morally minded in school. They're not learning anything worth anything. They learn about this woke system and they're being sexualized and all kinds of problems in school. And the parents should be up in a rage. If I had young children, they definitely wouldn't be in school. I wouldn't even, they would not be in school. I just would be homeschooling, which we did anyway, but definitely that would be a cause for me to do homeschooling. But again, it's up to the people to get together. But you get 20 or 30 people going in a county. You get a relationship with the sheriff. Sheriff understands what you're doing. They get educated. Here in New York, I think every sheriff in New York has gotten a copy of the book of Government by Consent. And we're just recently talking to a sheriff. And they had the book, and apparently they've been reading a little bit, and we're trying to get the sheriff to do something. Common law-ish, so to speak, and they're thinking about it. They're seeing the problem. They're seeing the necessity. They're seeing the power. So we have to get a sheriff's educated. And once you get a sheriff's educated, and again, understand what the committees of safety are doing, and they're on board with them, and sending either the sheriff or a deputy or someone comes to the meetings, give us their 2 cents, and also be able to bring the information back and forth to the sheriff and so on and so forth, because that relationship is an extremely important one as far as the county committee of safety is concerned. But once that's established, and now you got numerous school districts in a county. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go look in my county this week. I was thinking about this to see how many school districts in my county alone. And there's quite a few. I mean, many dozens, I'm sure. Scores, maybe even, of the different school districts. And then you got the different levels. You got the grammar school, you got the high school, and then, of course, you got the universities or the colleges. But when you visit these schools, one of the plans we've laid out, and we're going to write this up, but we've spoken about this before, but we'll write a paper on this so it'll be available for people to read and consider, the plan. And, of course, people can tweak their plan any way they want. We're free and independent. But the basic plan is this. You approach a particular school district. You go down to real property, which is in the county building, and you can get the addresses of all the people in that school district. And you can create these postcards and send postcards out in them. And let the people know that the Committee of Safety is having a meeting on certain date to discuss the problems with the school, the problems in the schools with the school district here, planning to go down to see the board on a certain date when we know that they're going to be meeting in this case. But we're going to have a pre-meeting, and everybody is welcome to come to discuss the issues and then bring these issues up at the board, and we expect to come in mass. So I think that will draw a lot of people into that county committee of safety, lots of people. And first of all, it'll bring them into the meeting. It'll then bring them down into the meeting of the school board. And we will be teaching people on how to put together notice and demand, or quo vanto, whichever one you want to call it. So that when we bring the business up before the school board, all the problems in the school and what we expect them to do and what we want them to, our children to learn, and so on and so forth, and when they refuse, then we would take the quo vanto or the notice and demand and give it to the sheriff, who would be at that meeting, or a deputy, and have them officially serve that paper onto all the board members. They got now 10 days to either be obedient to the people or lose their office, because that's the law, and we can enforce that by just filing a paper in the local state court there, and then you can seize the parents can seize those positions for the rest of that time until the next election comes up. Anybody can seize those positions, and then the people's will finally be done. And this works with every board, any place you go, whether it's a town board or a school board, it doesn't matter. Whether you're dealing with a group of individuals that are running the process, or a mayor, or anybody at any office, we can force these people to be obedient, and if not, then we call for their oath, their bonds, and their financials, and either they produce it or they give up their office. So this is a very powerful way of doing two things. Getting growth to the committees of safety, because once people, and it'll be a lot more than just the parents, it'll be grandparents, it'll be people who don't have children yet, or whatever. A lot of people, I think, will attend this, and I think when you put this kind of a thing out, I think every one of these school board meetings would be just overrun. It would be standing room open only. And again, I think, the pressure of the people will get their will to be done in what they want. And again, that's what the first meeting would be all about, is to discuss the issues, get a speaker and say who's going to bring the issues up and address the board and on behalf of all the people and so on and so forth. So every time you go to a school board and you have these meetings prior and then the meeting at the school board, and the people realize the power and the authority and the wisdom of committees of safety, I can see the committees of safety just growing in leaps and bounds, hundreds, thousands, literally, per county over the course of a year or two. And that's where we want to go. Many hands make light work. The more people involved, the better things are. The more subcommittees we can create, the more control we can have of government by consent as we come together on a monthly basis to discuss the issues and what we want to do and how we want to conclude it and what the will of the people is. And we would take back town by town, village by village, county by county. And, of course, our congressmen and the senators we have to return back to the states. But our state legislators, federal legislators, we need to take control. This is called government by consent. And this is how people have government by consent. Our founding fathers exercised their government by consent through the committees of safety. It was the committee of safety that brought forth the first Continental Congress. It was the committee of safety who brought forth the second Continental Congress and executed the Declaration of Independence. It was the committee of safety coming together and sending representatives to fight the Revolutionary War. It was the committees of safety coming together from all the colonies in order to bring forward the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. It was the committees of safety who was the original committeemen who controlled the government, being able to have government by consent. But we lost all that. And that's why we have to take it back. It's the most powerful thing we the people can do. And anybody who is really serious about wanting to save this nation should be stepping up, either signing up to become a contact for your committee of safety, or joining if there is already a contact there, and start working with the people in your local community to do whatever it is that you have to do. Each county committee of safety is free and independent. We need to get together on a national level to discuss national issues. I'd like to get that going soon. I was planning on getting that going this month. I don't know that it's going to happen yet. I'm going to see. Maybe we'll be able to get one national meeting with all the committees of safety before this month is out. To discuss, national issues, to discuss issues that go beyond the county, that go to fulfill the whole state or the whole nation, and come with potential solutions. maybe find more than one solution, you know, two or three solutions. And then each committee of safety decides how they want to approach that, and they do. And when one sees that the other committees of safety are accomplishing better goals than another one, and they share the reason why and how they're, you know, dealing with certain problems, then of course you want to copy that. And again, it's up to the people to do that. But this is what government by consent is. This is what government by consent looks like. It's the people working together on the grassroots level, taking control of our political and our judicial process. And that's something we don't talk about too often when we talk about the committees of safety, and that is the control of the courts. You know, we need administrators for the jury. Again, we get back to 3,000, counties, roughly speaking, and we need five people, four administrators, and one paralegal, who also would be administrator also anyway. So it would be basically five in each county, which is a professional position. But you have to be qualified on that. There's certain course requirements that we have set up here at National Liberty Alliance in order to qualify for that position. But again, then we take back our courts. We deal with judges that try to influence a jury one way or the other. We deal with we get rid of prosecutors addressing the grand jury. Only the sheriff can address the grand jury, the sheriff and the coroner. That's it. And occasionally, in some situations, the people themselves. If it's criminal, they need to take it to the sheriff. Anybody that has a criminal complaint, they need to take it to the sheriff. And the sheriff needs to look into it to see what they can think that they could do with it, whether they can think it's a crime or whatever, and then it's up to them to bring it to the jury. And if a prosecutor wants to bring a case to the jury, he's got to bring it to the sheriff. At least you have an honest situation going on here where the sheriff looks at it and says, hey, forget about it. You don't have enough here, and this ain't no crime anyway, whatever the case may be. But at least, the jury isn't beaten up. I don't know if people realize this, but they require, and I think this is in every state. It's on the federal level, and I believe it's in New York State and probably many other states. The Bar Association has moved things so bad and so far that a grand jury can't indict without the signature of the prosecutor. Just go figure that one out. The people now have to get the approval of a bar attorney, one of the minions of the New World Order, the destructors of our republic. They destroyed a political process. They destroyed a judicial process. They've destroyed our educational system. They've destroyed our religious institution. They've destroyed everything. Everything goes back to them, to the political process that they destroyed with all the party bosses statutorizing the committeemen and limiting their powers and putting them under party bosses. That's all accomplished by bar attorneys. They've been working on this since 1750, while we were colonies, before we even became a nation. They were already working on destroying the colonies, particularly the judicial system within the colonies. So it's up to the people to step up and do these things. And there's a lot of power here. And it's the power of the people getting together, thinking things out, coming up with common sense, and exercising their power and authority as we the people. Anything else?
Yes, this comes from a comment that you made either last Monday night or the week before. It says, I was listening to you read off a long list of woke businesses. You said in frustration, you have to go to them because they know you got a shop. My idea, and I'd like to have your input on it, is pick one business at a time. Target a boycott on them, and I'm sure they will know why their sales have plummeted. For example, Target. Shop at their competitors till they change their woke policies. See how fast it changes. Next, Staples, and keep going. When they see their stock value drop by half, a new kind of marketing plan will ensue. This is a golden opportunity for business to sell us proud, made in America, full of American pride and American money. Where is their advertising department? You guys pick up the torch and run with it.
Well, I wish it was that simple. I have to look for that video who laid this out and started putting out a list of all of the different corporations turning woke, potentially turning woke, and will turn woke. And they're moving step by step, point by point. Look at these people are like a rat caught in the corner. That's where they're at. The pressure is on them. I mean, Trump has done a really great job putting pressure on him, and he's putting real serious pressure on him now, if you've been listening to his speeches. And he's been talking about what he's going to be doing when he gets into power. He's going to release all of the papers on the Kennedy assassination. He's going to get ready. He's going to deal with the FBI, the CIA, and all these other three-letter agencies. He's going to deal with the Fed. He's going to deal with the IRS. He's going to bring us back to real money. Get rid of the banking systems that are set up, the Federal Reserve. I mean, and it's just, and it goes on and on and on. And again, he's pressing them to do things, and they're acting out of fear. And there's going to come to a point in time when they're going to have to do something really, really serious. And that probably is going to happen before the election comes up. I would think it is. I mean, the pressure is building up quite a bit as I watch what's going on now. But getting back to this woke thing, the problem is that, all the major corporations ultimately are owned by the elite. And a lot of corporations, that even the smaller corporations that are inside of other corporations, they've got mother corporations and so on and so forth. And even a lot of corporations that are just doing business that may not be directly connected, there's certain pressures that they put onto these corporations. We're talking about the powers that be, so to speak, the elite, the requirement. Now is the time. Okay, sacrifice yourself is really going to get to the point, because we can't afford to lose. That's they're going to be their attitude. And the list of corporations controlled ultimately by the elite goes on endlessly, paper after paper, page after page. And the thing is they're all moving towards the woke system. So if you go to a shop in ShopRite and they turn woke, well, you go down to Stop and Shop, but then they turn woke. You go to Grand Union, well, they turn woke. You go to Price Chopper, well, they turn woke. Before you know it, there's nowhere to shop. They've already destroyed a lot of the mom-and-pop stores. I mean, yeah, there's some of them, but, you can't get everything you need in the smaller stores, plus they're very expensive because that's the way the system set it up. And so you have to be able to afford to be able to spend more money to go to another store. You're going to have to deal with less food if you can't afford it. You go to Staples, fine, they turn woke. Well, then you go over down to OfficeMax. Well, they're going to go woke. Home Depot and Lowe's, they're both going to go woke. They're all part of the same control system, and that is the problem. I'm going to look to see if I can't find that video that laid this out. It was pretty powerful and frightening. But that's where we're at. But, I don't worry too much about it, because this is only short term, things are going to get a lot better, but they got to get a lot worse before they get better. People got to hunker down. People better make sure that they got plenty of food and water in their homes. That's one of the main things I think you need to do. Keep your money out of the bank, because there's going to be a bank holiday one day, and the banks are going to close down. And I heard that they may be closed down for 2 or 3 weeks. And you won't be able to get to your money. Maybe they'll allow you a very minimum amount of money. But for the first couple of weeks until they reopen, you're not going to get to your money. And that's when they're going to do, I guess, the exchange and move towards the app system, the digital. We're digital already, but it'll become more digital. So I don't know. I would suggest strongly keep very minimum monies in the bank, number one. Get as much food as you can, canned food and a bottle of water or whatever it is you need, and pile up as much as you can and brace for impact, because it's coming. It's just a matter of time. It's heating up. Just look out there what's going on. Look at the craziness, the insanity. But they're revealing themselves. And they're not going to give up. They're going to go till the very end. And it's going to get really bad at some point, and that's when the military will move. There are tripwires, I understand, and whatever they may be, I don't know what they are. I mean, clearly a nuclear explosion is probably definitely a tripwire where the military will move in and end this insanity. But, the plan is ultimately you got to wake up the people. You know, many of us that have been around for quite some time, knowing what's going on for quite some time, we watch and see. Not many people really are awake. But now, I don't know what the percentage is. I hear numbers. I'm not going to repeat them. I don't know if they're true or not. But it is considerable. I mean, people who never even pay attention to news are complaining. So it's really getting down there into the populace. Anyway, escaping woke, as far as purchasing things, is not going to be able to, it's not that simple as one might think. You know, I would think the same way. You know, Budweiser buckled down even more, doubled down on it. They're still pushing it. They're not going to stop. And Walmart, same way. They're doubling down on it. They're not going to stop. So this is where we're at. We're at war. All right. Anything else?
One last question, John. This person attached a couple affidavits and a copy of a U.S. District Court result in Northern Texas that claims that they prove the inherent weakness in using any election machines in any elections. So the questions, there's two. The first is whether or not we the people should submit these affidavits to our county sheriffs to prompt grand jury investigations into the use of election machines in our respective counties.
Well, look, the purpose of the committee man is to witness the counting of the vote. Okay, that was one of the jobs of the committee man. And the problem, what they're doing is they're cheating, because in the way they cheat is they collect all the votes and they bring them into a county to count them. So then you have all these people in one building counting the votes. That's not the way it's supposed to be. You know, the way it's supposed to be is every election district. I mean, I take the election district where I go. We got four machines in there, and in those four machines, you know, each one of them, I don't know, maybe a couple of hundred, 300, 400 votes. I don't know. It's not all that big a deal. But each election district has a committee man, or should have a committee man. And ultimately, the true committee man, which is the committee of safety, a lot more than, one or two committee men in an election district. But each one of these machines could be counted right there in the election district area. The votes can be then, certified, and it could be certified by numerous individuals. Number one, there is a person that's paid to be a watcher, okay, so that's one person who can certify it. We the people, without being paid, need to be there at least when they're opening up these the boxes to count the votes in order to witness it. And in the counting of the votes is done in a very unique way, the way it should be done. It's done by four people. Okay, two people on one side of the table, two people on the other side of the table. They pick up the one ballot and they put down all the different individuals that are, they make note of all of the individuals where the people on the other side of the table is writing it down. And then there's a person behind each one of them confirming the fact that they're reading it off that way. And then another person behind the other person confirming the fact they're writing it down accurately. And then you got the committee men. And these are people that the way the process is to be paid for. They're paid for these positions, or should be paid for these positions. But then there's the committee of safety, the true committee man, being there also to witness the vote. So you can get three or four certifications on the accurate counting of the vote within right there in the election district. And then those numbers could be sent up and tallied up on the county level, and then on to the state level, and they could be followed with, we got technology. Let's use it for something really good here. Now you can follow your votes, and you can look up and say, yeah, the votes that they tallied for the election district that I counted, well, they're right. They're right there. Or it's off. There's something wrong. You know, it's out in the open. So anyway, this is the way things need to be going back to. That's the way it was. I know when we ran some polling places for the Continental Congress back in, I think it was 2008, when the Continental Congress ran for, people ran for those positions, and I ran a voting polling place here in Dutchess County, with a couple of other people. And this was the process by which we counted the votes, okay? Exactly as I said, because that's the way it was, and that's the way it should be. We don't need machines. I mean, you could still use a machine. You know, you put the ballot into the machine, and it could do a register, but you can't count on that vote, that machine, given the accurate numbers. It still has to be hand-counted, and then you can confirm it with the machine. I don't even see a need for the machine to begin with. A box is fine. You have your ballot, you stick it in the box, and then the people deal with it at the end of the election day. So if the election, if you close down at 9 o'clock, you may be there till 11, 12 o'clock that particular evening until the votes are counted and sent up upline and so on. So that's the way it should be. Voting machines are counting in secret. Anything in secret is suspect, and so we shouldn't be counting votes in secret. You know, also, there's too many secrets in our government, and I think it's going to be a real eye-opener when they finally release all of the, I think it's like 5 million documents of concerning the Kennedy assassination. When all of that stuff is released, I mean, they've been holding that off for 60 years. You know, why have they been holding it off so long? Well, because it tells you who killed Kennedy, and it's the government that killed Kennedy. It's the CIA that killed Kennedy. A lot of people's names that we know were involved in that. And that's what I believe anyway. And all that's going to be revealed soon, and a lot more. You know, it's time. You know, Kennedy talked about this, secret societies and too many secrets, you know. We need to be an open nation, an open country, one nation. And it is true, there are certain things, of course, that need to be conserved in secrecy. But Congress isn't even told what's going on. I mean, where are the checks and balances if Congress can't see it? And I understand all of Congress can't see all these things, but they break up into committees, and they work out to committees, and they work things up, and then they bring it to the final floor for voting or something, however, depending on what it is that they're working with. Well, it's the same thing. You know, there's, different committees that have certain, oversight and all these things that are supposed to be, quote-unquote, secret need to be revealed to people, to a Congress. But, you know, one of the big problems here, and just listening to these, what's going on in Congress now, all of these different people that are being questioned and all of the different things that are being revealed and whistleblowers coming up. And you listen to the Democrats, I mean, where do they get their logic? Well, we know they're not acting out of logic. They're acting out of fear because they have to do what they got to do because they're part of the problem. And a part of the problem that created this problem was the two-party system. There should be no party system. A republic doesn't work with political parties. They're factions, and they only turn one up against the other. And here they're too busy debating our unalienable rights, deciding on what we shouldn't have, and trying to take them away from us. I mean, everything is under attack. The First Amendment is under attack, been under attack for a long time. Freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of a right to redress of grievances, all under attack. You don't have any of those things. They don't exist no more. The Second Amendment, the right of the people to keep and bear arms. I mean, that's under attack. Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the Sixth Amendment, the Seventh Amendment, all under attack, all trying to be snuffed out. I hear now, as crazy as this may sound, and maybe some wacko just made this up, but it sounds like somebody did, but they want to move the voting down to a 16-year-old. So 16, 17, 18-year-old kids can now go. They're trying to push that. It's Democrats doing that. And remember, the Democrats, the purpose of the Democrats is to destroy the Republican government that we have. That's why they birthed them. That's why they were born from, for that purpose, to destroy the republic. And this whole system, again, was pushed forward by bankers and the bar, And again, the bar has been in the colonies all the way back to 1750. So everything is under attack. Morality is under attack. They're coming for our children. It's a mess. And there's only one thing that can save this nation. Ultimately, it's God, of course. Without the blessings of God, we ain't going nowhere. So a bent knee is the beginning of all that. But beyond that, it requires people to actually do something. It requires people to give up a couple of hours a month and come to a meeting. And maybe spending a couple of hours a month, maybe 4 hours a month, 5 hours a month altogether, a couple hours a month doing something with the committee, maybe going and preparing to meet the school board and to deal with that problem, or a town board, or a village board, dealing with the local court system. We the people can shut a lot of these systems down. They don't have the power, the authority to hear a lot of cases. They do. They certainly don't have the power. Village courts, town courts, county courts do. Village courts, town courts, and city courts. They don't have the power or the authority to incarcerate an individual. They can't give you due process. Due process is not available in those courts. Yet they're also working off of commercial codes. And other regulations that cannot be applied upon the people, and so all these courts they need to shut down. And of course, once they shut down, a lot of the police force disappears. So you get rid of a lot of the, what do you call them? The code enforcement offices. That would require, of course, the sheriff's office to grow some more. But nevertheless, we do have to get to that point. Because it's all municipality law. That's what it is. It's Babylonian law, control of the people. That's what it's about. And you control them by, fleecing them, taking their money, putting them in jail, giving them, violations here and a violation there, telling them what they can do and what they can't do. You need to get a license for a right. It goes on and on and on. We're in big trouble. If the people don't get busy soon, we're going to lose it all. And it doesn't matter what the Trump and the military does. Ultimately, if the people still go back to sleep and don't do nothing about it to maintain it, because evil's going to come back again, because that's the nature of evil. So only the people can stop this. And let's not depend on Trump or the military. Let's do what we got to do. They'll do what they got to do, and collectively we can return maybe to some sanity. All right, anything else?
Yes, we have one last question, John. How can we, the people, apply a case from other states to our own state?
How can people apply what from another state to what?
How can we, the people, apply a case from another state to our own state?
Yeah, but I don't know what they mean by case. If they're talking about applying a law from one law to in another state, well, absolutely they can do that because it's in the Constitution to be able to do that. It's Article 4, the full faith and credit shall be given in each state and to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state. And the Congress may by general laws prescribe the manner in which the acts, records, and proceedings shall be proved and the effect thereof. So, if it's lawful for you to carry a weapon in one state, it would stand to reason it's lawful in another state because the law is the law and we're under natural law. We don't have contradictive law like they do in statutes. God's law is plain and simple and consistent throughout. It doesn't change. It never changes. And it's always the same. And you can count on it. And you could know it because God wrote it into our hearts. And it's as simple as putting out the ruler stick. Did you harm anybody? Do no harm. That's the main rule right there. Do no harm. Don't injure anybody. That's the ruler by which we should live.
Okay, that's the last, John.
Okay. All right, I don't know if we got any people in the queue. Hopefully we do. Let's take a quick look. Yeah, we do have some people in the queue, so I guess we'll go over to the queue. Okay, we'll take our first person in the queue. Looks like someone named Carl. What state you're from, Carl? You got the mic.
From Florida.
Carl from Florida. Go right ahead.
In the book, Meet Your Straw Man, are you familiar with that book?
I'm pretty familiar with it.
Okay. On page 19... they're talking about mortgages, and the example that they give is this gentleman, Jerome Daly, wrote to his mortgage company, I guess, and requested the accounting. And I don't know if that's all he had to say was, I would like the accounting, or if there was more to it, to, you know, question the accounting. And then down at the fifth paragraph, there's a website, freewebs.com/debt-free-sovereign. As it gives clear description of this process in Canada. But that website is not active, so I don't know if there's another website that addresses that same information.
Well, all I can tell you is you have to be very careful what you learn on the web. I mean, you know, I learned a lot on the web myself, particularly, you know, trying to figure things out and getting into the man on the land and, you know, writing the, you know, your papers to file in the county and all kinds of different things. And, you know, they kind of made sense. But the more and more I looked into it, the more and more I found all it does is get you in trouble. And it's not that what they're claiming isn't true, because the bulk of what they're saying is true as far as the man on the land stuff is concerned. But you're not going to win the argument there. You're going to look like a nut. You know, there's cases. I know an individual pretty good in the courts, and you know, very highly educated, and yet they went into the courts to fight certain things down in New York City, and the judge says, "I think you're crazy," and they put her into prison, into the psych ward. 6 months she spent there, and that's the kind of thing that can happen to you if you're not careful. But anybody who thinks that they're going to go and file the some kind of a paper in the county court, and clerk, and then they're going to maybe give up their license and maybe get rid of their birth certificate and you give up their citizenship and all this other stuff, and then they're going to go into a courtroom, click their heels, and they're going to be brought into a court of justice. That's not going to happen, and you're not going to win the battle that way. You know, what I've seen is only a couple of ways to win the battle. And ultimately, it all falls down to the same thing. You got to put the individuals that are blocking you, you got to put their feet into the fire. And that's what you got to do. As a matter of fact, coming up in the next couple of sessions, we're going to be looking into court cases. And we're going to be looking at a court case, which is exactly what we've done in this particular court case, going after all the officers in the court. Because the law gives us the power and the authority, and it's the common law that gives it to us, and the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled on this on a few occasions also, that a superior court can attack an inferior court. Instead of going through an appeals, you can execute a collateral attack upon the court itself. So if you open up a court of record and they hijack you into a civil law court, well, then you can then go after that court and sue directly the judge and all the officers in that court. So, because you got the higher court, which is the court of record. So that's one of the ways to deal with the problems in the courts. But as far as the mortgages are concerned, it's really, the whole thing is a scam. And ultimately, the way the whole system was set up, you know, when you go to get a loan, and some financial institution runs that loan to you, and then they send you a booklet for payments, and you send it to the bank or whatever financial institution set that loan up for. Well, all they did, first of all, they got a point or two or half a point or whatever it was that they got for setting that loan up and moving it along the line. And the money really comes in digital form, and it comes from the Fed window. So it doesn't even come from the bank. They have no skin in the game. So since they have no skin in the game, they have no contract with you. So that's the beginning of their problems. And there is no contract, at least not between you and the bank. It doesn't exist. There is no signature. There's nothing that makes a contract between you and the bank. All they are, again, is they're getting any signature that they may have is really the fact that they are the one that broker the deal. So they get the point or the 2 points or whatever it is for setting that loan up. So when they get the payments coming in to the bank, then it's a game being played. It goes back to the Federal Reserve. The piece of the action goes into their pockets, and they get fatter and fatter, and we get more and more you know, financially strapped. The whole thing is a con job. And it's all digits. Nothing even passes anybody's hands anyway. Not that much cash that flows around. It's all digits. But beyond that, so there was an arrangement made with the SESQ accounts way back when this whole thing was set up and when we dealt with as chattel, livestock, and then there's a certain amount of value given. So ultimately, you know, the arrangement was ultimately that you still don't have to pay that money back from the other perspective. Not that they're going to honor that, because they don't honor anything. They don't even obey their own laws and their own rules. And they change them right midstream, right in front of your face, they change it. I can't believe I go into courts. I just can't believe what they do. And one day it's this way, the next day, no, it's that way now. And no shame, just move on, and that's it. So you're not going to win any game, any case, anything going through that straw man thing. Same thing in the traffic courts. And we'll be covering some traffic court cases also in our course coming up in the next couple of weeks. And you know, let's take the traffic court. When you go into the traffic court, it's real simple. They don't have jurisdiction over you. They only have subject matter jurisdiction for commercial activity, but has nothing to do with you. And you know, codes and rules and all statutes and any of these things, regulations, they don't apply to the people. And besides that, they can't give you due process. Due process is a process. It begins with the beginning of filing a paper, depending on how it is, if it's criminal or civil. But let's take a civil part of the process. You know, you file a paper in the court. That's the beginning of an action. You go through a certain process. You go through all of the paperwork coming in, back and forth, the argument, and you go through all these motions, and then you do discovery, and you get the witnesses, and you question witnesses, and you go through all this stuff, all the way up to the point when you finally say, okay, now it's time to have the trial. And then at the end of the trial, well, that is due process from the beginning of the action till the end of the game when the trial is over and the jury makes a decision. That's due process. And you cannot deny us due process. Town courts can't give you due process. Village courts can't give you due process. None of those courts can give you due process. Well, why go in there and argue any of these other things? You just go in there and say you don't have jurisdiction. It's that simple. You write a paper, you file it, and they won't even answer it. You send a copy to the prosecutor. They now have prosecutors in these traffic courts now, so they used to not have that. But anyway, they got them now, and so you send a paper to them. They don't answer it. They ignore it. The clerk sends it back. Then you go into the court, and you bring the papers. You tell the judge, hey, you know, did you get the papers? And what papers? Well, I know you didn't get the papers because they were sent back to me. Your clerk broke the law. That's 2 years in jail. You know, that's a crime. And you read off the code, and you tell them, they can't be doing that. I challenge jurisdiction, and you don't have it. And once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided. So the judge turns to you and says, well, I decide. I got jurisdiction. Well, how can you have jurisdiction? You better write your paper and tell me how you got it, because the other side didn't write anything. I wrote my papers. I made a sworn affidavit. I told you what the law was. Clearly, I win. But the other side didn't rebut my affidavit. You don't have a decision to go beyond what's before the court. You have to decide on what's before the court. So how can you come up with a position and decide that you have jurisdiction? Now, these judges are not very educated. They're not very smart. And they certainly don't know the law. They count on this, quote-unquote, you know, prosecutor that they have in these traffic courts these days now. So that's what they count on. But in any event, you know, then it really comes, push comes to shove, and they say, well, it doesn't matter. I'm going to have jurisdiction. I'm going to set a trial date. And, well, okay, you could set whatever trial date you want. And you got to do this nice, by the way, you know. I'm kind of hitting it a little hard as I talk, but I'm very polite, you know, I'm very nice, and I don't say anything to attack these people. You know, nothing more dangerous than, how does that saying go? I forget how that saying goes. Anyway, these people think they have power and authority, and that's a dangerous thing. But in any event, you know, the bottom line is I let them know I'm here by special appearance. You know, you can learn that in law. And I'm here to test the jurisdiction. You don't have it. You have subject matter jurisdiction. You don't have personam jurisdiction. So you don't have jurisdiction over me, nor can you give me the due process that's required, even if you did have anything. So they say, well, okay, we're gonna have this come back here in a month. And you say, well, I'm not going to come back here in a month. I'm going to take my papers. I'm going to file in the federal court, and we're going to move everything over there to talk. And at that point, now you're looking for damages. And you see what happens. half the times when I file papers, you know, I've gotten tickets over the years, half the time when I file papers, I never hear back from the court again. It's like the ticket just disappears. Another half of the times, they make me come in, and I end up just going in and paying the money because I haven't got time. But now I decided not to do that. The last time I got a ticket, this is exactly what I did. I told the judge, I'm not coming back here no more. I'm here one time. That's it. I leave here. We'll go into federal court. And the prosecutor and the judge went aside, and they were talking and come back, and they dismissed the case. And that was a good thing. And they did the right thing, and they did the lucky thing, because I was going to sue them for a whole bunch of money. Because that's how you can beat the whole system. We used to go into these courts, and, you know, we would try this, and we'd try that, and we tried some of the man on the land stuff, you know, the sovereign people movement thing and all this stuff. Nothing works. And you find yourself, some of these cases, for 6 months, you're going back every month, back to the court, every month, back to the court. They're trying to figure out what to do with you. You're trying to figure out the next strategy to get out of that court, and they won't let you go. You know, it just doesn't go anywhere. So use the law against them, and use the process and the procedure, and press it forward. And they can't take your due process away, because every time a judge takes your due process away, like throws you out with Rule 12, well, you file a paper against them, and you sue the court directly. And then the next judge has to come in and make a decision, and the next judge looks at the case and says, well, these guys tried to throw him out, and which is what I was going to do, but they sued him. You know, maybe I better not throw this out. Maybe I got to let this case go forward. You see, that's where you got to get them, like that. Not that it's all that simple, because it's all an uphill battle. And again, you know, we've been through this for years now, trying to work out a solution. And I think we finally have found some good solutions to some of these problems, especially with the IRS. We found some really good solutions for these people. They don't want us in court, which surely they do not want us inside a courtroom. And because there's no doubt we can turn that jury. I don't even care if they're stacked. We're going to turn that jury. But they will try to silence you, so that's a danger. You know, I've seen when they went after Schiff some years back, and he died in prison. He wrote that book, The Federal Mafia, and which was banned in the United States. I bought that book. I had to go out of the country to buy it. But in any event, you know, he went into court, and I had a recording. I don't know what happened to that recording. I looked everywhere for it, but had a recording of a hearing that he had. And every time he brought up the Constitution, the judge went wild. You can't bring that up. I told you not to bring that up. I'm going to find you in contempt. And it was constantly like that, constantly silencing them. And another game they play is removing evidence. You know, they have this whole game with the rules. They say, oh, you can't bring that evidence in. Oh, you can't bring this evidence in. You can't bring that evidence in. Next thing you go into court and you have no evidence to prove anything. For your position, whether you're trying to defend yourself or if you're the plaintiff. It's a crooked deal here, and it's an uphill battle, and we're up against evil. It's that simple.
Thank you.
Okay, Paul. Next caller, LJ, you got the mic. How you doing, LJ?
Hey, John. Yeah, just real quickly, my sister and I, we're taking the common law court ethics course, and we have a friend that has a court date on August 1st for driving without a license and no tags, and they are trying to convict him again with having access to a gun without having a CW. But about 3 months ago, he already went to court for that, and I guess it fell under like a double jeopardy where he can't be charged for that again. And it was dismissed, the previous gun charge or whatnot, it was dismissed. So at any rate, so we're coaching him because we're taking to use, because, you know, my sister and I, we both pretty much have good records, and we're taking this course, and we're like, oh, man, like we wish we could have some stuff to practice with. So here comes our friend. So basically what we are having him do, and I just want to know if this is, get your blessing on this, if we are doing everything okay. But what we're doing is we're having him, he's going to file an affidavit of status, I believe. And then he's also going to file a quo warranto. Am I saying it right?
Quo warranto.
Yeah, quo warranto. Yes, there we go. He's going to file that before he goes into court. He's going to file that, and then he's going to mail it too as well, and then do a special appearance and, of course, show up to that court date and basically motion or move the court to dismiss because of lack of personam jurisdiction. So I just wanted to see if you were in this position with this, would you bless this and say, yeah, that we're on the right steps, or would you take a different approach?
Well, you're close, but first of all, status doesn't mean anything. You're just going to throw that in the garbage can. And if you go in there with a quo warranto before they actually even do anything, that's not necessarily righteous on the one hand, and they're going to throw that in the garbage can too, unless you know what to do with it after that. But then you have to have a good case. You know, you have to, first they have to do something wrong. So the first thought, look at, I get a ticket, I immediately, I take the copy of that ticket, I make a copy of it, I write a paper, it's about 6 pages long, maybe 5 pages long, I got a copy up on the website, people can go up here, and see, it's under education starts here, you go to law, come over to court forms and process, you have to be a premium member to get to this page, I think it's the only page on the site other than the course that we're running that you have to be a premium member for, which is someone giving $5 a month or more. But we have the papers down here on how to go forward in traffic court, instructions and forms for the traffic court. Now, in the course, we have updated papers. So it's stronger. Once I get a chance, I will update these papers too, but I haven't got a chance yet to do it. But in any event, they're still good. They're still strong. But the bottom line, first thing I do, I get a ticket. I immediately write my papers, make a copy of the ticket, you know, put that as attach it to it, and refer back to that. I find out who the prosecutor is in that particular court. I send the prosecutor a copy, and I send a copy to the court. And usually it's more than 30 days, but it doesn't matter either way. But once 30 days expires after you send that up and there is no answer, I then send a paper of default. Then the court date comes up, and I'll go down to court. This is what happened last time I did this, by the way. I go down to court, and when you go into the court, I send papers in. Now, in this case, the clerk did send it back to me. So that was a crime. You can't remove papers. Clerk can't remove papers. But they're not used to getting papers either. So anyway, that's when you go into. I went into court, so that's what you do next. Is you go into court, you deny their jurisdiction, you let them know you're there by special appearance, and you see where they go. If they say, "Well, I'm making a ruling," well, then you tell them they can't make a ruling because you have to make your decision on what's before the court. You can't just become part of this case. This is between the prosecutor and me. Prosecutor has said not. There's nothing going on here. I have my sworn affidavit. I rule the court. That's the law. And now they'll argue, and you see where they go with that. Maybe they'll go aside and talk and say, let's get rid of these people and get out of here. And that's that. Dismiss the case. Or they want to, you know, really... bite down on this thing and say, well, knuckle down and say, hey, we're gonna have another date here. You're gonna come back in a month, and you're gonna say, well, look at it. If I leave here with a date in my, you know, with a paper in my hand telling me I got to come back on another date, I'm not coming back here no more. We're going to federal court. I'm gonna move this to federal court for cause because you don't have jurisdiction. Then you see where they go with that. And if they say, well, okay, fine, well, then you go to federal court, and that court case stops. It's done. And then one of the things, and we follow up with the papers on all this, and of course we'll be following up on all this. Because the next thing you do when you're up in federal court, I always shoot for $1,000 face value Morgan silver dollars. Last time I looked, that's about $26 a coin. So $1,000 silver dollars is $26,000. And so for each violation of my rights, it's $1,000 silver dollars. And that's for all of the officers of the court involved. It's all a conspiracy. You can go after them for fraud on the court. You can go after them for all kinds of things, conspiracy. You'll see with the paperwork when we're going through the course, we're going to lay all this out. And so with that, you're now in a court. The wherefore clause lays out the monies that you're looking to get for restitution, number one, but also you're looking for a cease and desist order from the court down below. So you get your cease and desist order coming in from the federal court. Now, when you move into federal court for cause, you've got to be very careful because the cause that you're going in there is due process. Traffic ticket means nothing. Any kind of a ticket means nothing. Any part of the crime means nothing. Any of this stuff doesn't mean anything. And the federal court doesn't want to hear any of it, and it won't hear any of it. And you make that argument in the court, they're going to throw you out. They're going to say, we don't have jurisdiction for that. Case dismissed. You're gone. No. They have you're going in there for a denial of due process and any other violation of your unalienable rights that you can lay in there. And you can lay a couple in there. And then that court, then they have to hear it. Now, bringing that case in there, you know, the interesting thing, you know, on the federal level, a lot of these, that's where you get kicked out of a lot of courts, but also on the state level too. But when you're suing these individuals on the lower end, okay, and they're coming in with their lawyers, and especially from state, you know, people who are knowledgeable in the state courts but have no clue on the federal courts how they work. And for some reason, there's an animosity between them, particularly with federal judges against these lawyers that come in from the state level, and because they're not following the rules, the federal rules of civil procedure and all that stuff. I try to follow that as much as possible. As long as it is in harmony with the common law, I follow the rule. Otherwise, it's null and void, and I make that point. But in any event, you're going into the courts, and they get pretty hard on these guys. And they fumble a lot in there because they're not used to the federal courts. I think they fear the federal courts too, to some degree. You know, they're out of their element maybe. But anyway, it's not going to go very far. They have to rule on the due process thing, and it's clearly the proof is easy to show, you know, because every court has a jurisdiction. And the fact that they keep pulling you there, and they got the papers, and you laid the papers, you challenged jurisdiction, and they didn't deal with that in the proper way. All that is against them, okay? So it's hard for a federal court to go up against that. Not that they wouldn't now, okay? Bear in mind, we're up against evil. But the status quo that they maintain isn't so much on the lower level courts that they care too much about. What they care about is when you're going up after the big guys, going up after the IRS, the Federal Reserve, or any other government agency. When you're going up against those people or the major corporations, they have to maintain the status quo because they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. They have something on these judges probably, whatever that might be. So anyway, file a paper. To make it simple now, you file a challenge of jurisdiction. And then if the 30 days expire before you get to the court, you do a notice of default. You file that too. Make sure you serve it on everyone. Get proof of service. Do it just like you would do any kind of a court paper filing. And then go into the courts, the challenging jurisdiction, and move it to federal court for cause if they don't let you go.
If we have to move it to federal court, the only reason why we're moving it to federal court is because of violation of due process of the law, which the federal courts will
discuss in that courtroom.
Got it.
We're going to discuss any violation of your rights is the only thing, because the federal court is there to champion the Constitution. They don't have much of a jurisdiction. The federal court doesn't have much of a jurisdiction over the people. Although they take jurisdiction, they don't have it either, and you can deny the jurisdiction there. I'm in a federal court with an IRS case that we filed in the state court because that's where it belongs. The state court doesn't belong in the federal court. They say, well, these are federal agents. And I'm not going to make the big argument that they're not federal agents because they're not federal agents. The ATF, the IRS agents, they're not federal agents at all. They're corporate agents. But people believe they're federal agents. They believe they're federal agents. And the courts exercise everything as if they're federal agents. So you know, you're going up against the reality that these people believe. So I don't even bother with that argument. But the argument that I bring up or would bring up when you go into the courts is the fact that they broke the law. And they broke the law in their official capacity. At that point in time, they've lost all protection of the state. The state can give them no protection, number one. They have no protection that they wouldn't be liable for because they stepped outside their jurisdiction and they violated the law. So they lost everything. So that's why they don't belong in federal court. So when I moved into the federal, when the U.S. attorney moved this case into the federal court, I challenged jurisdiction. And that judge hasn't even ruled on jurisdiction. I filed that 3-4 months ago. But he's ruling on other things. And that particular judge never heard anything. These people writing letters, the U.S. attorney writing letters, telling me they throw it out, these people are crazy, blah, 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 blah. I mean, nothing but a bunch of lies in their letters. So it's not even on the court record. I mean, that's a sickening thing when you think about this. That should be against the law. You don't write a letter to a judge. No, you file the papers and you get involved. And here's the thing. So the judge decides, well, we're going to throw these people out, and that's a conspiracy between all the lawyers because they're all doing the same thing. They're all writing the same papers. They're all calling for the same, rule 12, 12, 3A, I think, so 12, 3C or something. Anyway, they're all saying the same thing, and the judge says, oh, yeah, that's right. We've got to throw you out, so we throw you out. Well, guess what that is? Rule that denied due process, didn't it? Because due process is the process of the court process, starting from the action all the way to the jury decision. That's due process, and you cannot deny that due process, the right to have a hearing, the right to speak, the right to question witnesses, the right to go through this whole process. That is due process. That's the fulfillment of due process. Okay, and so that judge that's denied me my due process, he's going now down to state court because we're filing a paper, which I think we're going to file this week. You know, I've already written it. It's all ready to go. But in any event, we're taking him down to due process with the U.S. attorney and the other three attorneys that are working with the banks and the Social Security and the IRS, all of them together. You got a whole bunch of lawyers. They violated three. Actually, in this case, there was 10 different violations. So looking for $1,000 for each face value in each violation times like five or so attorneys and taking it down into the state court because they've lost their protection, their state protection. They've lost their whole cloak of being an agent. They violated the law. They stepped out of their authority. So we're going down to the state court and now we're going to fight it down there. So the judge down there, you got to be a little careful with that judge too on the state level because they like to maintain the status quo also. But when they see the case and what's going on, they're going to say, these guys going after federal judges and U.S. attorneys, boy, they're going to go after me. So I think he's going to do the right thing. And I think we're going to get this thing in before a jury, and I think we're going to win. But we'll see. Again, we're up against evil. And I don't know what they have, under their sleeve, so to speak, that can defeat the process that we set up. So we'll see what happens. But that's what you got to do. It's a very simple process.
Okay.
One visit, and you're out of there. Then a paper to the federal court if necessary.
Okay, this is great. John, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Let me just add one more thing here. And this is an important thing, and this is where the committees of safety come in play. Because the committees of safety not only is educating themselves and starting to get active in the community and getting a lot of clout and power and authority, okay, you got a sheriff that's also being educated and realizing the power and the authority he has, and he's starting to exercise things in a way he wouldn't exercise before. And the sheriff next door and the other sheriff next door, they're doing the same. You got these sheriffs coming up and doing the right thing. So here, that's the other thing. You see, the sheriffs, once they come to realize and understand that due process is not available in a town court, a village court, or a city court, they can't accept those prisoners. Otherwise, they commit a crime too. You see? So, when the police department, the town police bring an individual to the county jail to be incarcerated, they go in one door and they'll be left out the other door, and they're going to throw the papers away. There's no case here because you guys don't have the due process. A village court, town court, and a city court, with very few exceptions. Here in New York, the Constitution says that the courts of records are county courts and state courts and the courts of New York City. So the city courts in New York City are courts of record. So a large city, you know, the Constitution may declare that the large city courts are courts of record where you can get due process. But all these other courts, you don't get due process. They're all municipality courts operating under statutes, which has nothing to do with me.
Got it. Okay, John, when is this call going to be up? Because I'm going to actually have my sister listen to this as well, so we can coach this guy to get the off his back.
Terry gets it up usually. I don't see Terry here today. She's always here, but she's not here now. Terry, I think, usually puts it up in the end of the night, in the evening. Jen, is Terry around, do you know? I don't see her here. I don't know. Anyway, usually it's put up at night.
First
thing tomorrow, I'd imagine. So.
Okay, I'll check tomorrow morning. Okay, thank you, John. Okay. That's it.
You're welcome. Okay, we'll take our next caller here. Bob Brew, you got the mic. Give us your state. Bob Brew.
I had to unmute myself. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you.
Okay. We covered a lot of ground so far tonight, and I'm almost euphoric with the blessings of your inspiration. So the things that I'd kind of like to cover is, you know, the getting members. And once again, I still haven't paid you guys any money. I need to become a member. I only like to pay in chunks of the year, but if I can do that, I'll become a member. But
well, you know, for some people who, you know, some people are really on a tight budget and they don't, you know, maybe Social Security and they're barely surviving. And you know, if you need access to the page I'm sharing here, and we'll give you that access. Just get a hold of Jan, and he'll flip the button and make you a premium member without having to put up to $5 a month if you can't afford it. And I do know that that is a situation for some people because times are real hard and Social Security doesn't pay much.
Yeah. So, and once again, I'm going back with an amalgam of NLA and precinct chairman. The precinct chairs that I'm with, they're clueless on the Constitution. They're clueless on the law. Yeah. And I've referred a bunch of them to the NLA website, although I haven't followed up well enough to nurture them into, you know, like becoming members. But it would be a great way to grow, you know, the committees of safety with taking your message.
I do agree with you on this because, again, once the committees of safety are active and going and the committee men, the statutory committee men find out about them and maybe they visit over and see and they realize, well, this is the real committee men. We're not statutorized. We're not here by statute. We're here by the law of the land. We're the people. This is an unalienable right to do this. And we're not limited to the number of committee men either. We can have 1,000 committee men. We're not limited. Like my county is limited to 149 committee men, because we have 149 election districts here in this county. So one committee man for each election district. That's what they figure, and that's how many seats are available. And so, you know, so that's limited to begin with, because they don't want too many, but they do need as many as they can get. They need enough people just to walk the papers to get people on the ballot. That's what they're all about. But they will suffer. They will suffer from attrition. Once a committee of safety is established in a county, and a committee man who's really there trying to do the right thing is involved because, or she's involved because want to do the right thing and do get involved in the political process, which they get involved in the party bullshit. So, but you know, really, you want to just get involved in the political process. But once they come over to the and see the county committees going, and they're saying, well, here's the real committee of safety, and they not only deal with the political process on the election time by walking the ballots and getting people on the onto the ballot, walking the papers and getting people onto the ballot. They're also getting involved in all these local problems. They're dealing with the school boards. They're dealing with the town boards. They're bringing people into correction, bringing them back under the Constitution, and they're controlling the courts, and they're bringing common law back into the courts, and they're holding the judges' feet to the fire. And that's where the real power is. That's where I can accomplish something, and they're going to come over, and they're going to say back to the other committee, "Hey, you should see what they're doing over here." So yeah, they're going to lose through attrition. They're just going to fall apart, and they'll probably be, brought over into the county committee of safety, and parties will fall apart on their own. Look at political parties have got to go. Washington spent 2/3 or more of his farewell speech to talking about how bad parties are. If you go through, I think it's Federalist Paper number 10 particularly, I think that was done by Hamilton, and talked about the political parties as part of who we are. It doesn't work with a republic. It only works with a democracy and various other places maybe, but it doesn't work with a republic. You see, the reason why it doesn't work with look at what do? They get in there and they nibble at our rights, and they use their platforms to try to take our rights away ultimately, which empowers them more, and they fill their pockets more by the special interest groups who are funded by the powers that be, and so on and so forth. So the whole thing is just nothing but a rotten egg. And but in any event, all through that process of trying to really destroy. We don't need parties because there's nothing for them to debate. They don't need to be talking about our rights. They don't need to be talking about adding things to the Constitution or taking things. What they need to be doing is being obedient to the Constitution and exercising the powers and the authorities we give them, particularly the legislators, giving them 18 authorities in Article 1. Well, this is what you can do. This is what you can discuss. This is where you can make law. And that's it. You can't come outside of it. You can't create these federal agencies that we didn't give you power or authority to, if they do. You see, so once we put them back in the box and you put them to the job that they're supposed to be doing, then we'll truly be free and independent.
Okay, but this is where my euphoria is coming in. Using the information that the party has with the precinct chairs and how they are supposed to relate to each of their 3,000 members, and what they do is when they're locking their doors and passing out their invitation cards, it would be great if we had an invitation card for the NLA to give to all the, the people in the 3,000 people in our precinct. And that's the way we could grow the NLA by multiple orders of magnitude. I don't know. I'm just so euphoric. I can't stand it. Each of these precinct chairmen, and I'm with you. The parties are just the uniparty, and they are our enemy. But we've got their information on all the people in my precinct and every other precinct chair's precinct. To reach out to the people that want to get something done. And give them an avenue to get the education and also the activation of, how they can be involved at the local county. I've spent 6 hours with my county clerk two Tuesdays ago, and 2 hours in her office last Tuesday, and I spent 8 hours with one of her sons, who is used to be a policeman and knows all of this stuff and is going through. A whole another story, but it all involves what you can help him with, although he's way more educated on these processes than you. As a matter of fact, he had to show up at court last Friday for another appearance that he was supposed to have on Monday, and the judge was trying to make him, "Do you understand this? Do you understand that?" And he was always saying no, and he knew how to avoid the trick words of the bar court. And anyway, he just tried to ask a question, and he ended up in 3 days in jail over the weekend.
Yeah, probably, yeah, absolutely.
But so when we educate, you know, the voters in our precinct to the tyranny that's happening at the lowest levels of government, I think it'll just be, you know, it'll just be an explosion, you know, of members. I would like to have like an invitation card from the NLA that, you know, I could present to the people as I've made up my own, but I would like to have one specifically for the NLA, if that's something that we could put on the website. I just think
we do have some flyers up there. They're probably under the starter committee and safety tab, probably down by tools. There are probably some flyers because we have created some flyers. I mean, other people can create flyers and then we can discuss it and put things together. And so we can have all kinds of different flyers if that's what you want to hand out. But one of the things you got to be careful with, because when the party bosses see what you're doing, they're not going to be too happy about this. Remember, the party bosses, and this may not be true in all of them, because, you know, there's some small towns or small areas where, you know, the corruption isn't like it is in other areas. I know here in New York, the corruption is huge. And even up into a lot of these smaller towns is huge corruption. And it's the party bosses, and they're the ones making money. There's all kinds of business going on. You know, the party bosses, like the county chairman, for instance, he's got huge availability to all kinds of things on the political end of things to get contracts. Maybe the guy's got a garage and is doing repairs, and he gets the contract on the highway that's going past you or something for a tow truck or something. So he buys a tow truck and he's making money. And there's all kinds of things going on like that, snow plowing and all kinds of things. That people can get these contracts and get. So what you find on these levels is a lot of businessmen and a lot of lawyers. I know in my county there's a couple of lawyers that are running the whole thing. And remember, they're the ones that destroyed this whole process. They're the ones.
Right.
They're the ones that tied the hands of the committee men. They're the ones that statutorized the process and brought them under the party bosses. They created that whole system.
Okay. Here in Texas, we have this Rule 44, and if anybody in the party violates their oath to the U.S. Constitution or the Texas or to the party platform, they can be removed. And we are starting to exercise that power right now. The last time I spoke with you, there had been one censure of our Speaker of the House. Now there's been two that just came out Thursday. And there's more on the ropes, and it's very likely that the Speaker of the House will be removed from his position because he violated the platform of the GOP here in Texas. So this is where I don't know about New York, but in Texas, these party bosses and all that, or the county chairs, they have to follow their oath, and they have to follow the platform.
It may be okay in your area and maybe not in other areas, so, you know, we really don't know. But look, I like the idea, and I agree with the idea. They're going to find out about the committees of safety once they become empowered, once they start making some changes and the word gets out. And you know, look, just by going through the process of doing what I was talking about a little earlier as far as going to the school board, putting out a postcard about a meeting concerning the problems in the schools, we need to correct it, and you throw a few buzzwords in there like woke and sexualizing children, and you know, our children go to school. My nephew graduated. You know, he's out of school now. He's 20 now, but I was following him along for quite some time since he was pretty young. And they don't teach him anything. They don't teach him about our founding fathers. They didn't teach him who George Washington was. They don't even know the difference between the Revolutionary War and the Civil War. I mean, it's that bad. That's how bad it is.
Yep.
And so when we do these things, Remember that when that mail goes out to somebody, there's probably a committee man in this school district and a couple of committee men in that school district and maybe a committee man in this school district. So as you're going through these school districts and you're putting out these papers and a committee man gets a hold of it and says, oh, let me go down and see what's going on because, yeah, I got my son in school or my daughter in school or my children are coming up to school or my grandchildren or whatever the case may be. So they come to the meeting and they find out he is the real committee man. And then they find the power and the authority and the control over that school board that we can exercise. And that person's going to say, whoa, this is where I belong. And that's going to draw them in too. So there's lots of ways that this can get out to them. But if you can get away with passing out flyers and not be approached by a party boss and something drastic is placed upon you, as long as you can get away with that, then that's fine too. You know, any way we can get the message out, we should.
But right.
We'll move on and get it, boys. It's getting late, and we've got about four other people there. But follow, final point, Bob.
When can we talk?
I'm sorry, when can we what?
You've mentioned a couple times that we need to talk. When can we do that?
I'm not getting you. We need to what, talk?
Yes, you've mentioned that on two of our calls in
previously. Well, I'd like to talk, well, first of all, I want to get a good conversation going on at least once a month and maybe even more than that on our Monday night programs focusing in on national issues where we can discuss these things with the committees of safety and, of course, all the membership that comes and everybody's welcome to come and everybody should be getting into a committee of safety anyway. And everyone in every committee of safety is welcome to come to the meetings, but to discuss these things, and to discuss issues, that'll come up soon, but to discuss the committee man itself, you know, I don't know what kind of a conversation we want to have. I mean, no. We can try to have a conversation if there's something that we need to discuss.
You mentioned ballots and also the elections, so I know that I got one of our SRECs, which is a senatorial representative for the GOP, and she had me come to a school board. Well, I had her coming to school board meetings, and then she had me specifically come when she had, you know, a bunch of her people to attend. And I tried to read the first sentence to the school board of one of the books that their librarian recommended, and they shut me down three times before I could even complete one sentence.
Well, then you remove the school board from power.
Yeah, right. But I'm just giving you examples of how it's already in its infancy doing what you are suggesting, and as far as having meetings, I like to have them. I tell everybody I'm going to be at Commissioner's Court an hour early, and I'll stay for as long as you want afterwards. And that's a way to aggregate people and find people that are interested in being, you know, an NLA member or being on a committee of safety. And as far as the ballots go, we've now got this roadshow, the hand count roadshow thing, and we had a presentation 2 weeks ago. We had four of our commissioners show up, a state representative, chief of staff showed up, and the county clerk showed up, and she's on the commission, you know, for elections. And so anyway, it was, you know, that's another example of, in its infancy, utilizing the information that the NLA has and to make these guys, you know, get them to where they're presented with the truth rather than, you know, what they see on the media. So, and this, and that sort of happened in court one day. There was a gal that she's presented about a jail situation on one of her relatives to three different judges. And she was talking 2 weeks ago about that, and the judge shut her down. And the guy that went to jail, he stood up and just said, "Let her speak." And he was arrested then. He got out that day, but then he had to go back on a Friday, last Friday, to appear before the judge. And just the fact that he was asking to ask a question of this judge, who I know him personally,
he shut him down and locked him up for 3 days. So those are things that people are becoming aware of, although they're getting brainwashed by the media and making it seem like the bar way of doing stuff is the legal way to do stuff. And that's where, our precinct chairs going around with me, going around to my neighbors and telling them the truth and getting them to show up at these commissioner's court meetings and school board meetings and city council meetings. So, it just seems like it's a volcano ready to erupt with, a whole bunch of people that have been educated through, like, these calls and everything that's on the website. And, getting together with common law people that are really fed up with the tyranny that's being expressed, even at the lowest level of our government system. And one last thing real quick, on the mortgages, if I've had, seven properties that were sold on a contract, and what the Bar Association or their cronies make you do, you have to fill out a two-page thing in its entirety of, when the note was signed and what the interest rate is and how much has been paid and what principal's left, what interest is left. And that's not anything that mortgage companies do, but yet they're making the little guy go through all these hoops, to show the people that bought a house on a contract, exactly where they stand. So, there's no justice in letting the mortgage companies just change the terms when us little guys, have to be very specific and we get in trouble if we don't. So, I just think that, we've got an inroads with all the information of every voter in Smith County, and those voters could be turned into NLA members. And then, I just see a massive army, especially with how urgent people are of getting something done. And this is a way that it can be. We can make the connections. We can inform them of what the law is, what common law is, and how it's being broken at every level of government. And so this would be, in effect, what our founders had back, before the revolution. And all we need is Otis Jr., James Otis Jr., whatever it was, a speaker that can, kind of ignite the fire a little bit. But
all right.
Anyway,
I got to move on because we have four people. We got 10 minutes left, and
we've got to move on.
I think we'll be able to get a lot of people from the committee, the statutory committee, eventually over time. So I kind of agree with you. All right, but I got to move on. Okay.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
All right.
Thanks.
Brent, you got the mic. Go right ahead, Brent.
Oh, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah, I was just wondering, trademarking the name, is there any benefit to that, trademarking your own name?
Trademarking your name? I know somebody teaching that stuff, and I don't follow along with it. I see errors and in the process that they're trying to go through and showing that it has some power and authority. So, yeah, I have not been sold on it. How they get there, I've been told how they get there, but there's a lot of gaps there, and I don't agree.
Would that be the same as copywriting?
Again, what does it do for you?
To keep others from using it.
You got one of the most powerful titles available in this nation. It's the title of the people, we the people. We the people ordained and established this Constitution. We're the kings. You got the biggest title going. Use it.
Okay.
God gave you that title.
And when it comes to the court, who are all the officers of the court other than the judges?
Brett, hang on a minute. I got to walk away from computer for a minute. My dog is whining. I got to let her out. I'll be right back. Give me 1 minute. Less than a minute. Okay, I'm back. Go ahead.
Okay. My question was, who are, other than the judge and the prosecutor, who are all the other officers of the court?
Every lawyer in the court. I would not go after the bailiffs. They're officers of the court, too, but I wouldn't go after them. And they should be connected to the sheriff's office, and that's another reason why you don't want to go after them.
Okay. What if they were village officers?
You mean like cops?
Right.
Police department? I wouldn't go after the cops either. I go after the lawyers and the judges. Those are the ones that deserve it. A lot of them know what's going on. And they know that they're crooked, and they know that they're lining their pockets, and they're fleecing the people. They know it.
All right. Well, thank you, John. I'd just like to keep it moving for any other questions that others may have. But thank you for that.
Okay. Thank you, Brett. Okay, Jody, you got the mic. Go right ahead, Jody. What's your state?
Illinois,
Jody. Go right ahead.
Okay. And I talked to you a couple months ago, I believe. So I have a petition for administrative review in a circuit court. I'm appealing a Civil Service Commission decision regarding my termination from a state agency, DHS, who was my employer. Mm-hmm. They terminated me for not wearing a mask.
That's a slam dunk case. To win on this side of devolution, but it is a slam dunk case. Go ahead.
Okay, so the Civil Service Commission, their counselor, filed for a 30-day extension to file the record. They said they needed to gather everything, get it organized, whatever. So I filed an objection to that. And I didn't really realize until after almost 2 weeks that I was supposed to set a hearing. So I set the hearing, and it's set for 5 days after the date that they're supposed to turn in. You know, they filed the extension through the 14th, and the hearing date is on the 19th. So if they turn in the record, if they get that filed, can I still have that hearing? Because I want to talk to the judge about I know they're going to keep trying to file extensions for everything. So I wanted to have a hearing about it.
So you have to move the court. The whole thing is strategy and control, and you got to move the court. Are you taking the course?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, because we're coming up now to that kind of, situation here where going through the appeal and also going for enforcement and that kind of thing, and then we'll be getting into cases. So next week I think we're going to be talking about that.
Well, do you think there's any reason why, since I already have a hearing set,
mm-hmm.
why I shouldn't be able to keep that even if they do file the record? Do you see what I'm saying?
No, not really, because I'm not following along totally of the case.
So the hearing was set because I filed an objection to their motion for an extension.
Okay, so
they filed.
And you're denying it and you're having a hearing about it. They're going to get the extension.
Yeah, well, my question is, if they file the record before the hearing, can I still have that hearing? Or is that going to be considered moot and they're going to want to...
Well, in other words, they filed a paper and you haven't filed a paper yet.
No. So they have to file the record. They were supposed to file the record from my Civil Service Commission hearing. They were supposed to file that record.
Administrative hearing in-house. It's not in a judicial process, but an administrative process, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you know, look, they got a lot of rules and different things. I don't know if you've got a hold of their rules to see how they operate. You know, when I did a Social Security case recently, and I had to go learn all of the different rules and different things and, you know, and understand, you know, what I needed to understand in order to win. And so you have to do a lot of digging in that area. And so you have to find out what the statutes or the regulations or whatever they call them in that process and read through it, you know. One of the things about law, you know, if we're in just law and not in equity, you know, there is, for instance, what I'm trying to say is this. There's 57 jurisdictions in the federal level. And actually, there's more than 57, but there are 57 USC codes. And then there are other things, but there are 57 codes. So each one of those codes is a different court system. And so if you're going to specialize in defending the president, the United States, I don't know what code he's under. It doesn't matter. He's under a code. You know, his powers and authority is under a legislative code. And that's under Title III, as a matter of fact. Congress is under Title II. And the general provisions is under Title I. So if you were going to get into law and defend the president has lawyers, well, they have to know ins and outs of that, all of that title. And that's like 1,000 pages, I think, on the president. Some of these are like 1,000 pages. Now, I don't think it gets that deep on where you're at. Now, you're in a situation, an administrative process, but there is the regulations you need to, and the rules and how things work. You've got to go study that if you're going to fight a battle in that area.
Yeah, I've looked at it, but I guess I'll look at it closer.
Let me go back. What is this case about? You were wearing a mask and they fired you?
I refused to wear a mask, even though, yeah, I was using a cubicle with a plexiglass barrier, so I was completely enclosed in there.
The administrative process. I'd go right into court with that. But again, now you have to know how to deal with that and be able to win that. You can start in the administrative process, and then there's an appeal in the administrative process, and then from there you can move it into the state court.
I am. Yeah, I'm in the appeal process right now. See, that's the thing. I can't get out of that now, because if I do that, then they're going to say, well, she's barred from it because of res judicata, because she already brought this before us, and there's already a decision through the Civil Service Commission. They've already...
Well, this is an issue. You can go through the whole process, and even if you lose, you move it into the state court, you can win it there. But again, you know, you have to understand what you're under. Remember, you were working for an agency. What's the name of the agency? Was it Health and...
Department of Human Services.
Okay, so Health and Human Services, you were working for the agency, so you signed in to their administrative process, okay? So that applies to you. But that doesn't mean that it has to. If it violates you, then they're not going to be able to see it. That's what you're going to have to take into the state court at that point, because they'll be able to see it. So go through the process, do the best you can, but you need to go and look up the law concerning that administration.
Yeah.
You know, whatever the codes govern it.
So can they use res judicata? If I went through an administrative court, can they say, no, we've already...
First of all, they don't have power authority over your health and your being. They can't require... Where does it say in the law that they can require you to wear a mask? It doesn't exist.
Right. I have a solid case. I'm just afraid if this judge for some reason says, well... Whatever, Civil Service Commission, they didn't have whatever. They couldn't, they did what they could or whatever.
No. You're talking about it in a court of law?
My petition for administrative review is through the circuit court.
I'm lost now. You see, there's an administrative process, and in that administrative process, you can go into an administrative court. And if you lose, you can then appeal it once. There's one appellate process that I know of that's in probably all the administrative processes are the same. So there's one appellate court. And then if you lose there, the next thing you do is move it into the regular state court. And you come to a court of law. And you can push that towards a jury if you want, trial by jury. Remember, they can't make you injure your own health. And putting on a mask injures your health. A lot of people don't realize this, but, you know, first of all, you're breathing the same bacteria in over and over again to begin with. And that's number one. Number two, you're preventing more oxygen from going into your lungs. And if you're sitting there 7-8 hours a day and breathing like that, it's not working good on your health. And it's really extremely damaging for children, extremely. And it's also psychologically damaging for children going to school and wearing a mask, especially the very young ones that are really just starting out. Oh, this is what happens when I go to school. I got to wear a mask, you know. They're not even thinking. It's the reality that they're in, you know. So it's really damaging for them. But for us, and if you have a health issue, you know, some people already can't breathe very well as it is. They put a mask on, they can't breathe. I mean, I put a mask on, I can't breathe at all. Four or five is about all I can handle, and it comes off. And I tried to appease in some places, especially with places I know, but I got into a lot of fights, you know, not physical fights. I mean, I had people, you know, coming up to me, and they were really nasty and all kinds of stuff. You know, I'm putting everybody in jail. I said, what's wrong? Didn't you get your shot? You got a mask on. What are you worried about? You know?
Yeah.
So, but in any event, they can't force you to damage your health because that's what it does.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
I'm leaving.
Thanks.
All right, Jody, I got to get going in a minute. I could take one other call. Let's see. Janelle, you got the mic. Go right ahead, Janelle.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, but I only got a couple of minutes. I got to get out of here.
I got a real quick one for you. I think it'll take you just a sec. I'm in Washington State. I'm going through the Washington State Assembly, the training for kind of moving, correcting my status. And I just was, something came up.
What status are you trying to correct? Aren't you one of the people?
Yes. We're doing
the highest status going. You don't need anything beyond that. We the people ordained. We're the ordainers of the law. We ordained the Constitution. We established.
Yes. So maybe I'll divert my question to asking you about what you just said. So the whole idea of status correction from into an American state national is that not valid?
It doesn't do anything for you. You already got the highest status going in the world. You're one of the people. Okay. God gave you that status. And we, you know, we made a covenant with God. That's the Declaration of Independence was a covenant with God. And we're living under his law and receiving his liberty. Mm-hmm. And if the Lord gives you liberty, you have liberty indeed. And okay. So all of our unalienable rights come from him, and the protection comes from him, and we're in his courts. Of course, they robbed his courts away. We're trying to bring it back, and, you know, God's going to deal with that at the end one way or the other anyway. But the bottom line is you got the highest status going. You don't get a better higher status anywhere else.
There wasn't a, like, with the birth certificates and all of those things. So there isn't a deception that I need to actually correct.
No, not at all. Look, the birth certificate is a problem. I agree. We'll have to fix that on the other side of devolution. There's nothing we can do about it now. You're damaging yourself by trying to get rid of your birth certificate. If you try to stop being a citizen, if you stop being a citizen, they can deport you. And you're not a citizen anywhere else. You can find yourself living in an airport like that movie or living on a ship or something, a person without a country.
Okay, because my question was about, like, Social Security. Is that something that you'd been, you know,
Social
like...
Social Security is another problem, but we can't get on this side. You can't get a bank account. You can't do anything if you don't use a Social Security card. You don't have if you don't have a birth certificate, you can't get an ID. You know, they put us in a box. We're stuck in it. And we're going to have to think about how we're going to, because we created a whole world around these things
right.
now. So now we have to figure out what are we going to do. Mm-hmm. And that's going to have to be a discussion. But it's not a discussion to worry about now. On the other side of devolution, you know, the Social Security number, well, it'll pretty much be used for Social Security, ultimately. you know, as far as the birth certificate, you know, again, you know, I don't know where that's going to go. We have to talk about it because I don't know what we need to do on that, to be honest. I've never given a lot of thought to puzzle that problem together.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so American State Nationals is what I'm going to, you know, the site that I'm going through, and each of the states.
I don't know what American State National is, to be honest with you. I don't know what it means or what the purpose of it is.
Okay.
So, look, you're a citizen of the United States, are you not?
I am.
Okay. And as a citizen of the United States, you have the rights of all the, whatever goes on in New Jersey, and you've got all the rights that New Jersey people have when you go into that state. And when you go into New York, you're just as good as a citizen there, and you go to Pennsylvania or to Texas or to California. You're a citizen of every state. I can get up tomorrow morning, move to Florida, and I don't have to report anywhere or do anything. All I have to do is cross the border and plant my things there, and I'm a citizen of Florida, and I'm going to exercise whatever rights, a Floridian would exercise. You know, the point is you got all the power and the authority, and the United States. You know, we gave the federal government the ability to naturalize people. So you become a citizen, it's a federal level thing, but once you become a citizen of the United States, you then move to whatever state you want. You're a citizen of that state or whatever, it doesn't matter. So I don't know why a national, what that is all about and what it gives you, and I definitely would not give up my citizenship. And remember, our founding fathers used the word citizen 7 times in the Bible, I mean, not in the Bible, in the Constitution. So they've used it quite often.
All right. Okay.
You know, there are a lot of people teaching a lot of stuff out there, and I fell for it too for a while in the beginning. But when I started to do my research, I saw the problem with all that. So.
Okay. Great. Thanks for your thoughts on that. Thank you so much.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, Dan, I see you on there, but I can't talk right now. I got to go, and I'll give you 1 minute. That's it. But I got to get out of here, okay? You got the mic for 1 minute, Dan. Go ahead.
Mr. John, I don't know whether all the states have this or not, but a process that they might could use where there's corrupt decisions and verdicts that come by a judge that is frivolous and caught up in conspiracy and is trying to defraud you and use the courts, in my case, is what's going on. To defraud and for an unlawful purpose. So I've just discovered that possibly some people might benefit by the fact of having file a 60B, and then you could go against the judge without having to appeal his decision onto appellate court like in North Carolina. And there's two judges that could be in the same case, basically, that could be indicted, plus the litigant, which is a hardcore criminal,
Dan.
And a felon.
Yeah, Dan,
so I just wanted to mention that. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I'm not really keeping up with what you're saying. I'm not sure what you're talking about or what case you're talking about.
It's 60B. A 60B could be used to set aside the verdict. And versus you normally, a lot of people could see that the avenue is only to go to appeal the decision of the judge and carry it to the appellate court. You actually can set aside his verdict and with a 60B in North Carolina. And
well,
you can then turn right around. Go ahead, sir.
The best way to deal with a judge who tries to take control of the court when you open the court of record is to sue the court directly. And that's the best way.
Yes, sir.
Collateral attack, and that's that. I wouldn't appeal. I've thought of appeals. I teach people how to appeal. But I'm not using that process. I'm not appealing no more to anyways. When a judge comes in and hijacks me into his civil court, I'm suing. And I'm suing for damages. And that's the best way to go. But there are other strategies, I'm sure, too. And what you're bringing up might be a good one, too. But we'll have to
thank you very much. I know you've got to get out of there. Thank you,
right.
Thanks, sir.
Okay. All right. Thanks, everybody. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday, and hopefully we'll see a lot of you at the Saturday class, and we'll pick it up from there. Good night, everybody.